Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble Mailbag. TV pundits, players missing out on big moves and documentaries are the order of the day. It's Saturday, 6th of April. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Hello, everybody. It's Saturday again, and my goodness, doesn't it feel good, Jim?
It does feel good.
Yes, I thought so.
Is Saturday the best day of the week?
Yeah, it has to be.
Does it? Yeah. In football terms, it should be.
It should be.
Yeah. But after the bloody Thursday night we had.
Yeah, but that's a one-off.
Can it get better than that, though?
Are you saying Thursday night is the new Saturday afternoon?
I'm saying this Saturday in this week has got a lot to live up to.
Mm-hmm. But it is Saturday. You might be listening on a Saturday morning. There's an incredible, beautiful vista. Yeah. Of a weekend right in front of you.
Yeah.
And you're filling it with us, and we thank you for it.
The possibilities are endless.
They are.
Now, we know...
They are limited within a wide scope, I would say. No one's flying.
The parameters are wide, but governed by the accepted laws of physics. Mm. But we know, as well as you do listening, that you're going to spend the whole weekend sat around your pants doing nothing.
Oh.
But at least you're going to listen to the mailbag to start with.
Yeah. Well, I suppose you could go to a theme park and then you sort of fly.
Mm-hmm. Put your clothes on, though, if you do. If you want to get involved with the mailbag, you can tweet us on X. You find that at twitter.com, at Football Ramble. Message us on Instagram, at Football Ramble. And, of course, email us, show@footballramble.com. But, of course, if you really, really want to pull at our heartstrings, then become a patron at patreon.com/footballramble.
It's really important, that last one.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Mm. The burgeoning patron community that we're very proud of. And we'd love you to be a part of it.
I believe you're going to start with one of our patrons,
Fortis Leo on the Discord.
Great name.
He's one of my favourite Discorders, actually.
Mm-hmm. Can you rank him?
I could probably, if I had time, I could rank him. I could definitely rank a few bottom ones.
Oh,
for sure.
Don't be like that. I suppose you are the ever so divisive Luke Moore. So this is all with your shtick, isn't it?
Exactly. I'm not like a Jeremy Clarkson. It's without the money.
Yeah. Violent when you're not fed.
Probably in better health.
Yeah.
I'm like Jeremy Clarkson.
Go get yourself a farm. Right.
Fortis Leo asks, how's the trend of quote-unquote club representatives that is prevalent in modern TV coverage ruined it? The likes of Gary Neville, Steve McManaman and Jamie Carragher in particular, they appear to be unable to speak objectively about their clubs or their rivals. I don't expect them to be entirely unbiased, but they should be reasonably objective, and instead they've simply become unpleasant to listen to. They are unable to professionally separate themselves from being supporters. I personally find it childish and embarrassing, not entertaining. In contrast, Roy Keane does seem to be able to separate his frustration with a lack of standards at Man United and give fair criticism. What are your guys' thoughts?
Some big swings from Fortis Leo there.
He's not Keane, though.
No.
It's framed.
Coward.
He knows.
He's good, though. I really like him.
Yeah, oh, yeah. What the tough one? Yeah, yeah. It's phrased combatively, isn't it?
Yeah,
But I think the overall crux of the question is clear. And we don't want to spend our time, tearing other people's houses down, because that doesn't build us a house. But I think it's an interesting... I do think it's an interesting topic. Before I get your answers on it, a bit of extra kind of context, which may be helpful. There appears to be now a load of different vehicles that a lot of these pundits have, whether it be podcast, other shows, whatever it may be. And I think I would agree with Fortis Leo that the line appears to have been blurred as to what you're there for when you're punditing on the game itself. And I think it's important to make clear, I think he means the games themselves. I don't think he means other entertainment magazine shows, because they've kind of always been there. There's more of them now because it's podcasting. But in terms of the broadcast of the games themselves, it is interesting. And I would also add that Gavin Cooney, who's a writer that I really enjoy reading, who writes a lot about football, Irish guy, he talked about it the other day, earlier this week, on an article which was entitled, I won't read the whole thing, but the title of the article was something like, "There's never been more punditry than there is now, and it's never been so bad." And he basically made all these points about why are we expecting to have to listen to this kind of banter hour around the broadcast themselves, when actually people are there for kind of quite earnest, insightful, possibly punditry. And for example, these guys that Fortis Leo has listed are capable of getting this right. Because, for example, Monday Night Football is brilliant, right? Mm. That does a brilliant job of doing that. So anyway, that's the context. Over to you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I would say that an interesting point within that is about how they can't... how they're sort of unable to speak objectively about both their clubs and their rivals. Now, I don't really have a problem with Gary Neville openly supporting Man United in a broadcast because, of course
you
he
know,
does.
You know,
it's ridiculous to expect him to be objective and neutral about that. As same with Carragher and McManaman. I think as somebody with a dog in the fight, it's when they're sort of less objective about their rivals that is frustrating. It feels like sometimes if you're watching an Arsenal game, Gary Neville's doing the commentary, it's like there's someone hoping they will fail.
But do you honestly think that?
It's how it feels. That may not be correct.
That's imperceptible to me as a non.
Well, yeah. I agree with you, Luke. I don't really pick up on that as strongly.
So I'll give you an example, and perhaps this is petty, and there's plenty of examples.
Which case I'm interested.
Yeah, there'll be plenty of examples of Neville praising Arsenal and essentially doing his job in a professional and objective way. But he doubled down on something recently that made me think. Yeah, is this a sort of leftover from the rivalry between them in the good old days, shall we say? a few seasons ago, when Arsenal brought in Ramsdale, Ben White, a few other players, the season before they signed Zinchenko and Jesus, he was saying that there's no plan at Arsenal. It's hard to see what they're doing, and the plan was very, very clear. They were tightening certain areas, like making the squad younger. Mm. Like it was very, very obvious that this was the beginning of the path that Arsenal are on now, and you didn't need to be an Arsenal supporter to see that. Mm-hmm. And he was questioned and challenged on it recently, and he doubled down on it, and he stuck to his guns on it.
But I could say that's his character, though.
Yeah. Sure.
To double down, it'd be unlikely, especially on perhaps Twitter, if it was on there, or X, should I say.
Yeah, you should say X.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Twitter. That he's going to do that. Also, like a pundit can just get something wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to know more about Manchester United, of course.
Sure. Of course he is. But
just get off his back, Jim.
There is, I don't know, there is a sense, and it's not just with Arsenal as well, it's with Liverpool as well, that he kind of, again, maybe it's me kind of reacting to the emotional state that you get into when you're watching a big game and having somebody who feels like a detractor being the person explaining it in front of you.
Yeah.
But it does feel like there is a difference in the way that he speaks about certain teams, Neville in particular.
I think, weirdly enough,
I think that's probably inevitable, though.
Well, this is part of it as well, isn't it?
Like from the outside looking in, I don't have a Premier League team, right? And I don't none of my the
probably won't for a while. As well.
I wouldn't have thought so. And none of the teams they talk about are anything that I've got anything to do with. So more objective, I guess. Like I would just say like one of two things. One is when I think of the harshest things that Gary Neville said in recent years that I can remember, they've actually been about the Glazers and about Man United.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
The second point I'd make is that if we tackle this question in this way, it's going to be impossible to get to the bottom of it because the people who are making the accusations are also, by their very nature, completely biased. Doesn't mean you're not a reasonable person. Jim, you've always been pretty even-handed. Like you're a pretty chill guy generally. So, but there is an inherent bias there. Mm. So what I'd be more interested in... So I don't actually... So do you want to pick up?
Well, I was just going to say, perhaps leading into your point, is nothing lives in a vacuum, does it? We're all susceptible to everything going on in the media and society, blah, 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 without being too philosophical about it. And I think with pundits, you know, you see the explosion of fan media and just podcasters.
But I think they've been massive influenced by that.
Of course they have, and that's the point I'm saying.
Yeah.
That if they were to still sound like they were broadcasting in, say, the 90s or whatever, then I think that you could definitely say it's perhaps less entertaining. It's a bit dry.
It was ivory tower stuff then, though.
It was, and you know, I don't think we want to return to that. It's never going to be perfect. And, you know, I would say, you know, one of the shows that's quite popular in the US, and we see a lot of the clips here, is with Carragher, Henry...
The CBS coverage of the Champions League.
The CBS, exactly.
Kate Abdo, yeah.
You would think that Jamie Carragher was twins, based on what you see on Monday Night Football and on that show.
Yeah, and people love that, but that's gone like the opposite end of that, like sort of very pally and almost like a podcast doing live broadcasts at the games,
if you like.
And some people like it, some people don't. Don't underestimate what the producers are egging people on to do.
Of course.
I mean, look at the, and the great example of that was last season's Champions League final. Jolyon Lescott, they would basically say, are you feeling nervous now? Like, you're a Man City fan, Jolyon, where, you know, we hear he's more of a Wolves fan, but you must be thinking that. So, and that, to me, is like...
So Gavin Cooney in his piece highlighted that as the kind of nadir of it.
But I don't. Did he right? But I don't blame Jolyon Lescott for that. But of course he is therefore going to be pressured to sort of think that. And also, if you're on TV or if you're doing something, you will have your shtick. I mean, Roy Keane had this to take Fortis Slayer's mention of Roy Keane. Roy Keane was on the TV when he first came on, and he, you know, we all know what Roy Keane's like, or what he was like as a player, and well, we have a bit of an insight on what he's like as a bloke as well. Certainly when punditing. And he's like, oh, he's the angry guy. And you kind of get typecast, and it's this bit of self-fulfilling prophecy, you could say, and you kind of, oh, that's my stick, that's what I go to. Now, I think Keane's kind of gone through that now, and perhaps out the other side. I think someone like Michael Richards has got a bit stuck as, oh, I'm the guy who's just here for the banter and the laughs.
And that's the point.
Yeah, and I, again, I'm not necessarily blaming Richards for that, but I think there is that. You know, if it would happen to us, you know, you have to kind of battle against it.
But here's the thing. I don't personally mind the club biases too much, perhaps because I don't have a dog in the fight, and perhaps because I'm able to, you know, be a bit more objective, and I know a little bit about broadcasting, so I kind of understand how it goes. And I think as long as the presenter is strong enough to hold them to account and ask the right kind of questions, and it doesn't get too ridiculous, I actually think it's fine. I actually think it'll be pretty... You'd be careful what you wish for on that front, because if you've got people who had no interest whatsoever, it'd be boring, right? But there is a balance that needs to be struck between entertainment, analysis, and serious sport coverage that I think needs to be acknowledged. And I think the broadcasts around the games themselves have probably gone perhaps too far in the entertainment direction.
Because they want authenticity, because that's all the thing that...
But they also want, like, social media clicks.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Well, that is a huge, huge part of the ecosystem of it that has to be taken into account.
But so are podcasts.
Oh, indeed.
Podcasters have affected this as well. My point is just this. In a nutshell, my point is this. There are plenty of places out there to find entertainment around sport if you want it, but pundits on broadcasts of the games should probably at least try and remember why they're there. Like, there's been instances this season where it's just become almost a giggle hour around a Premier League game, which is confusing to the viewer. And what the producers don't understand why it's confusing is because normally games, particularly towards the end of the season, start off with some massive montage about how disastrous it would be if Sheffield United were to be relegated, or you know, the Premier League's the golden promised land, and if you drop out of it, it's the worst thing in the world. That's very much their angle. And then bang, there's a gag from Alan Shearer. Do you know what I mean? It's like, or a gag from Michael Richards and Theo Walcott, or, you know, and I think they lean too much into the entertainment side of it, when it can be just as entertaining without being quote unquote light entertainment, and without being, you know, Michael Parkinson on a Saturday night with Rod Hull and Emu or whatever. Do you know what I mean? You're there to provide an insight first and foremost in the experience you've got. And I actually think Roy Keane does that very well.
I do.
I think he's very basic on one level, because I don't think he wants to get involved in the tactics. You're not going to see him moving things around a board. But you are going to hear honesty and authenticity. And I think that's important. And the spectre at the feast of this whole debate here is that Sky Sports specifically know they can do this because they do it on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
And well, they have a lot more room on Monday Night Football.
But you could still have the tone.
You could have the tone.
The modern pundit has a lot to do, really, right? You have to be a serious analyst. The top people have to have that in their locker as well and have to do a lot of different things. But the question was, has the trend of club representatives that is prevalent in modern TV coverage ruined it? Now,
I don't think it has. I think the answer to that is no, personally.
I think it's no, but there are points where I understand why the question's being posed. Another great example, and I felt really sorry for Gary Neville when this was happening, but when United were beaten 7-0 at Anfield last season, and the coverage afterwards was as a sort of bigger part of the story as the game.
Yeah, it was.
Because he's just getting pelters from Carragher and from Keane as well, sort of indirectly, but he kept, you know, his shots kept ricocheting off Keane and back into him. And he said, goodbye from Liverpool Fan TV or whatever it was at the end. And it was quite unedifying. I understand why Neville would have felt like that in a situation like that, because that is like the stuff of nightmares to have to justify that on TV. But just watching it made me feel a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It was it was too heated and too like emotionally kind of aggressive almost. I think we can do better than that.
Did you like it though when England were 3-0 up against Denmark at half time in the World Cup in 2002 and Ian Wright was giggling and pointing at Peter Schmeichel in the studio?
Because I did.
what a niche throwback that is. That people love you for that, you know. Yeah. That. There's not a single person in the UK.
That, among many reasons.
There's not a single person in the UK that's going to have remembered that like you did there.
Not even Ian.
But I think in summary, I think the answer is no. I think the club representative things is inevitable, and it's always going to happen, and you've got to be careful what you wish for, as I said. But I do also think these broadcasts now are a serious danger of being, without being too po-faced about it and too earnest, there should be an earnestness about these broadcasts because you're telling us football is important. And clearly football is important to a lot of people. And if you're going to turn it into the banter hour, ultimately, there are podcasts out there for that. And
you don't want it to be too stuffy, though.
You don't. And that's what I said, there's a balance to be struck. But another great example before presumably we move on. I mean, just last week, I think, on either Match of the Day or Match of the Day 2, the lineup was Lineker, Richards and Shearer. Mm-hmm. And it really just became an extension of their podcast.
Yeah.
Do you want that on Match of the Day?
Definitely not.
Is that
not.
What Match of the Day
Definitely
is?
Definitely not.
No, exactly. Mm. So you've got to, that's not to dig out the podcast specifically. But I mean,
you can do that if you want.
I don't think it's very good, right. But that's not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is that this is a different platform for it, a different environment for it, and a different audience for it, crucially.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a balance to be struck. We can't just be filling the airtime with millions and millions of programmes where everything is geared towards social media clips. Like, basically, the whole of Saturday morning broadcasting on Sky Sports is that now. For people who don't really watch TV because they're young and they watch YouTube and use social media and all the rest of it. So, great question, great debate. It's nice for us to be sat a little bit outside of it to be able to give our kind of honest opinions because I think you don't get an awful lot of that. So, hopefully we've done that.
Hopefully we have. And hopefully we'll see more of Noel Gallagher as a pundit as well.
Oh, Jesus.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, I'm talking about the sort of luxuriant quality.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Jim, you've got the next question.
I do. Chris has sent an email. I have it in my hand here.
Old school.
After Xabi Alonso's decision to stay at Leverkusen, or Leisterkusen, as Your Key to Sport calls them, he is one of the century's greatest wits. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on this should he stay, should he go situation, and if there are any examples that spring to mind of players or managers who missed their moment for a big move. Now, my thoughts on this are I'm delighted that he's staying at Leverkusen. I don't think he'll be at Leverkusen for more than possibly two seasons, maybe even one season. But he's taken them to the Champions League. He's got a chance to establish them in a league where there is room for that, let's be honest. Mm. And I'm delighted to see that he's going to stick around and try and do that.
And that Harry Kane may not win a trophy Bayern Munich.
Do you care about that?
Not really.
It's quite funny, though,
it's funny if it happens this season. But I think, he deserves a trophy, doesn't he? Come on.
Yeah. But with England.
Sure.
People always forget as well, it's never mentioned this because of all the rhetoric around Alonso, is that they've still got a chance of winning the Europa League as well.
They do. And for the record, by the way, I really hope Harry Kane wins a trophy club level. It's ridiculous.
And also, actually,
but that's not the debate.
But for Leverkusen as well, there is a chance here to a point, banish the ghost of Leverkusen,
yes,
where they were on for a treble, the treble, because it included the Champions League, with like something like, was it 10 days to go or something like that?
And they all
collapsed. Yeah. They won nothing.
They lose the Champions League final to Real Madrid.
They did. At Hampden Park.
That's right. That's
Zidane with that famous volley, yes. Right. So that would be great for them, but obviously that's not the question that's being asked.
Yeah.
I suppose within the question is the possibility that Alonso might come to regret this, right? And I think we can all look at him and think it's very clear and obvious that he's going to become one of the sort of top level elite managers for years to come.
Yeah.
Maybe that won't be the case. Uh-huh. I suspect that it's impossible to fluke this sort of season, and that actually Alonso's stock will remain high. They'll keep achieving things. And also, if they win a treble this season, or even if he just wins
a double,
even if they just win the league, if they stay unbeaten, there's a lot of things here. He'll have a lot of credit in the bank, even if next season isn't
the same. There's another angle to this, Jim, though, that people I don't think have said, but maybe they've thought it,
is, let's say that he has two or three seasons at Bayer Leverkusen and is considered one of their best managers of all time and so on and so forth, and then he was to move and go away. Well, what a great 2 or 3 years. Xavi Alonso can say, well, actually, when I started the Bundesliga season as Bayer Leverkusen coach in my second season there, and we defended our title, that was a great honour and I loved it.
The
feeling he has at Bayer Leverkusen now, he will not get at another club because he has created this. He has created them as on the brink of German champions. If he goes to Real Madrid, he's at Real Madrid and it's a circus and it's a huge thing and it's far bigger than him. It's far bigger. Of course, he can create a great team and he could do great things with them. Same at Liverpool, same at Bayern if he goes, because obviously he played for those three sides. What he's got now at Bayer Leverkusen, I don't think he'll have again in his career. It's almost the kind of...
Because he can't, basically.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's almost like the sort of the indie band who play the kind of slightly smaller venues.
Yeah.
That feeling that you get playing them and the sort of close-knit community, and then, oh, actually, the second album, the third album, catapulted us into stadiums. You take that.
Like when Ramble went from the Bloomsbury Theatre
exactly
to the Shepherd's Bush Empire.
Damn right.
Yeah.
There you go. We're playing Empires, Hackney, as well. We've done, you know...
Careful.
But, you know, and so it's great that he's staying, and actually to kind of... It's not a case of prolonging that. It's a case of, no, I've built this and I want to see how far I can go with this.
Sure.
And I think that's totally... It's not as if that Bayer Leverkusen, he took them over, they were going to be relegated, he got them out of trouble and they finished a respectable fifth or something, they qualified for the Europa, and, oh, you're going to stick around for the Europa League next season?
Yeah.
No, this what he's doing here, there'll be a Champions League side next season and he's going to lead them into that. It's superb. Whereas if he did go to Bayern, in terms of league position, it'd be stepped down, and oddly...
The Liverpool thing as well is interesting, because the cynical side of it is that why would you want to go into Liverpool after Klopp?
Yeah.
As well, that's a really high stakes move.
The only counter argument to that is that they've got a very good young squad and young players who, yes, they've been schooled in the Klopp way a bit, but they're still there for the moulding, if you like. But the way he's managed by Leverkusen this season suggests, as Jim's saying, is this will last. This is this is not a case of...
It's a project, isn't it? It's not a one-off.
Exactly. But should we perhaps look at the other part of the question?
Why not?
Here, where Chris was asking other examples that spring to mind of players and managers who missed their moment or missed an opportunity maybe for a big move.
Gerrard to Chelsea? Lol.
I mean, you know, it is one.
I think a lot of people would take issue with that, though, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I was sort of thinking along the lines of players who were the best player at their club or the most sort of heralded player at their club and could have moved on to a bigger
team.
Well,
Matt Letizia.
Letizia is the obvious one, isn't
he? Spurs move, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, there was always talk of Man United as well, but don't know how true that was.
He could have, let's be honest.
Shearer could have gone to United as well.
Shearer, I mean, yeah, but I'm reluctant to kind of say that because...
Well, Man United are a bigger club than Newcastle.
True, but yeah.
I understand Marcus's reticence there, and sorry to sort of jump in over you, but I think Shearer won the Premier League with Blackburn, and he then went and became a club legend at his local club. Like that means something. But
it means a lot to him, and he said very many times he doesn't regret his decision. Well, I believe him.
Better to have failed at something that you love doing.
But I believe him when he says he doesn't regret it.
No, I do as well.
Yeah, but he could have been a part of the arguably the greatest legacy in club football history in England. Yeah.
If you look at some players, I mean, this is not an example, but say if like Gabriel Batistuta had stayed at Fiorentina and he hadn't have won Serie A and whatnot, he then goes to Roma and wins it.
Yeah.
It's that type of player. And Marek Hamšík at Napoli is one who... I'm sure he could have gone to a bigger side, but loved playing at the club. He's a club legend and they love him for that.
He's a funny one, Hamšík, isn't he? I think part of it is like really, really big standout players sometimes are their character is a big part of that and how much they stand out on a football pitch. And Hamšík is one of those. Yeah. There's a sense that like this guy feels like he's inevitably going to be a really memorable sort of iconic player for a huge club.
And people's priorities can be different, can't they? Mm-hmm. You have to have a huge amount of ambition clearly to rise to the top of the game. But then after that, your ambitions are, some people are just dead set on winning. Some people are dead set on breaking scoring records. Some people are dead set on being legends at clubs. Like, you know,
some people like where they live.
Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly. Family reasons, that kind of stuff as well. But if you look at Paul Scholes, for example, it's different slightly because United are the biggest club around anyway. But he was like, well, I never really wanted to go anywhere else. And Jamie Carragher says the same. They always joke, don't they?
But they are
going back
huge...
to question number one. They're always joking about whether Carragher had any interest.
But they won trophies where they were. I think that's the difference. I think that that's what you're kind of drilling down on here. It's why Harry Kane, you know, moves to Bayern. If Spurs were winning trophies or had won, even had won one trophy when he was there, I think he might have stayed. But you know, he goes on that hunt for silverware, which is totally understandable.
Is there an argument that Kane himself should be an answer here, that he could, if he'd moved, say, 3 years ago, he'd have probably cleaned up somewhere?
Well, yeah, maybe.
But I mean, in 3 years' time, he may have cleaned up.
Yeah.
True.
But I mean, looking at players again who you know, could have gone elsewhere. I mean, Fulham's Breda Hangeland was linked with Arsenal, but he just loved playing for Fulham.
He did
subsequently go to, say, Crystal Palace, and people might think, oh, I don't remember him or why. But it's the player who has maybe had a really good season or two seasons. Now, I'm not talking about club legends, I've just had that. But a player who... It's almost like now's the time to cash in, kind of thing.
Yeah, so there's a Portsmouth had a player called Alan Knight, who was a legendary goalkeeper there. And he played for Portsmouth his whole career, and he's still an ambassador for the club now. And he was really, for at least a few years, was by the best goalkeeper outside the top flight and got a lot of interest. But he never wanted to move. And then when I was at his testimonial, he said, he did a big speech saying, oh yeah, that's never really wanted to. I remember telling you guys about it because someone shouted out, no one wanted you, and everyone laughed, and I felt really bad for him because it was his testimonial, mate.
That is quite poor. I would even throw in, if you're talking about goalkeepers, I mean, Kevin Pressman was a good goalkeeper. There was interest in a few other clubs.
This is the only podcast he's getting a mention on this weekend?
I hope not. I hope there's a best penalties ever scored podcast,
and
he's mentioned in it. But perhaps one that everybody knows and remembers, Jamie Vardy. We talk about Shearer, you know, he'd won the Premier League, and then, you know, Vardy had won the Premier League, and then was the Arsenal. And he did seriously look at that. He was looking at schools in the area, reportedly. He was looking at, a move, and people...
He would have burnt that club to the ground.
I cannot see any scenario where that wouldn't have been a disaster.
Yeah, it's such a strange one when you think about it. And I know he would then win the FA Cup with Leicester.
Yeah.
So there was another big trophy there. And again, I'm glad he obviously played Champions League football with Leicester. It's an incredible story. But going to Arsenal... That is a bigger club, you know, the chance of improving them and seeing what they could do.
Doesn't always work, though, does it?
Well, it doesn't work. And I'm intrigued by that those who you think, maybe they should have stayed. You could say that about Michael Owen in
Liverpool. Actually, a player I think of quite often in that scenario, Francis Jeffers. He made that leap to Arsenal.
Yeah.
Had a really, really good season for Everton. Was prolific for the England under-21s as well. Looked like he was going to have a big future. It didn't quite work out for him at Arsenal. He just couldn't force his way into the team. I think he had some injury problems as well. And then he just never recaptured the form that got him the move in the first place at any other club.
Well, as I said, you know,
before
he jumped in, Michael Owen, I would say. When he left Liverpool to go to Real Madrid, now he said, I wanted to go to Real Madrid, how can you turn down that move? The following season, Liverpool win the Champions League without him. And then when he came back to England from Real Madrid, it was never the same.
Because he went to Newcastle.
Well, yeah. And from there, it was all a bit bitty. I know he played a little bit more for England. But, you know, again, would he have been better off staying at Liverpool? Possibly.
Yeah. And loads of Chelsea players. I mean, Chelsea went through that phase now of just signing any player who had a good Premier League season for an unfashionable club.
Yeah.
And then a lot of them failed to make an impact, didn't they? Your Steven Sidwells of this world.
Scott Parker suffered from that a little bit as well. Sean Wright Phillips.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Danny Drinkwater.
Yeah.
Drinkwater's a great example.
Yeah. All right, let's finish with this question from Carl on Instagram. With Manchester City having a documentary out, which season for which club would you most like to have seen a documentary made for? Good question.
It is a good question. And I think before I give you my answer, I would just like to say that I find those quite sanitised PR exercise documentaries around big clubs quite boring.
Well, so it's your question. You can have this.
No, but I mean, the reason for the question being asked is because of the Man City treble thing. And I think really we have to kind of distinguish between what a documentary actually is and what an extended kind of glamorized PR exercise is.
Okay.
It's much more about furthering their appeal around the world than it is about giving you a genuine documentary.
Sure,
they chuck a few little kind of fillets in there for you to...
But give Carl a bit of entertainment on a Saturday.
Well, the one I would like is, having said what I've just said...
If you want Warts and All, Harry Redknapp at Portsmouth.
No, legally, that would be impossible. It would just be impossible. But...
Be a trailer.
Yeah, it would.
It's like, when's it coming out? No, that was it. That was our whole thing. Yeah. That's all we could get cleared.
Given that there are him and people like Paul Mercer are on the after dinner circuit talking about stuff that should just never have happened.
Yeah,
it's probably not never going to see the light of day. But back before football was quite so sanitised, and I believe there is one coming later this year about this. Anyway, the 1999 Man United season would be interesting.
Would be.
That's being made. Unless I've completely missed it and it's come out already, I don't think it has. It's been listed as being out this year. So that would be pretty interesting. But the ones I like in general, the most interesting ones really, are about the kind of hardships. It's stuff about, you know, genuine interesting stuff like Sunderland Till I Die, the five-year plan, the QPR one, I think it's called the five-year plan. Club for a fiver. Yeah, yeah. That stuff is the actual interest that you don't see, sure, is the one. But for me, it would, having said all that, and perhaps contradicting myself, the 1999 Man United season was so formative for me, even though I'm not a Man United fan, it was just so massive. And I was at quite an impressionable age and I just loved that season. I'd be really interested in seeing behind the scenes how it happened and what went on.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing with the all or nothing things is, here's what happened in the season you just watched, where what you really really want is insight into the story of something massive. So something I would love to get an insight into, and again, because it's the human story here, is that season at Newcastle when they had the 12 point lead under Kevin Keegan.
Like, yeah, good
people
one.
Joke about it, and we all talk about the, you know, we're still fighting for that title.
That'd
thing
be great.
But to see a proper insight into how that all unfolded,
see,
and what
the
happened,
mood would have been like to
yeah,
season
completely
goes
as well. Because you've got, obviously, you got the twin story of Ferguson's Man United kind of breathing down their necks and all the mind games and that stuff. To see a proper deep dive into that would be great.
Yeah. 90s football wasn't sanitised either. Mm. You look at the PR stuff.
But there'd still be loads of footage.
Yeah, quite. You look at the PR stuff that they throw out around this latest Man City one, it's like, Jack Grealish has got a dog. Mm. You know, yeah, Jack Grealish likes Bovril. You know, Jack Grealish this. Like, that's all, I mean, it
but
is.
You like that's Jack Grealish, here's loads of him.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah, they probably can't use some of the other stuff, though.
Well,
yeah, that's the real documentary.
They should be using
Jack's 48 hours. That's what we want.
Jack Grealish uncovered.
Yeah,
yeah, that would be quite good. I know what you mean. If you, it's that idea of really trying to capture a mood and a feeling at a football club, and it's just so difficult to do. Yeah. Even if you had access all areas, and you do it, it's very difficult to kind of capture that.
If I may be deeply immature, the Spurs lasagna gate season.
Just that week.
It all looks like it's going to go brilliantly, brilliant, brilliant. Oh, it's gone wrong. Why has it gone wrong? Really shittily.
The final episode is just a load of blokes shitting their pants. Mm-hmm. You'd sit through that.
Yeah, I think I would.
Very popular in some parts of North London.
I think it would. And East London.
Very specific.
Don't forget
part
that they revolved as well.
Yeah, that's true.
What's yours?
Well, I would have loved to have seen, you know, again, access all areas, all that kind of stuff. Ancelotti at Milan when he had all those big players, you know, the sort of big season.
Nice.
Just because, you know, with that, the stories of him arriving to, you know, training in a helicopter and that kind of stuff. Yeah. But there's such big names. I think
the gesticulation in the dressing room.
Yeah,
imagine.
Exactly. Just all those big players. I mean, to be honest with you, I know what you're saying about you want the hardships and all the rest of it. I wasn't that bothered by Sunderland Till I Die because a lot of people I didn't know and stuff. And I know that's maybe not the spirit of it. But in terms of, like, usually documentaries are made about sort of massive stuff going on. Not always, but there can be. And I, you know, Beckham's arrival at Real Madrid, you know, seeing all those players, the Galacticos, it doesn't have to be Beckham necessarily, because maybe that's a bit too much, but just seeing all those players, like, what are they like together?
That's so funny you say that, because I know you're not saying this, but the Beckham documentary I found quite boring.
Yeah, well, no, that's what I mean. I'm not talking about that.
But the Sunderland Till I Die thing I found fascinating, chiefly just because it was about more than just the club. It was about the decline of a city and about how the working classes have been left behind and how kind of unfair modern life is and how the economy actually works for so few people, all seen through a lens of a football club.
Yeah.
And then a load of charlatans come in and just make it almost like an episode of The Office.
Well, okay, so, but like, okay, Blackburn Rovers League winning title season, you know, that a town like that, you know, it's just, that is a proper moment in time.
And there should be footage for that as well.
Yeah. Or the season where Steve Keane knifed Sam Allardyce in the back and took his job.
Steve Keane.
I would be equally be interested
what an
in
era.
That.
Yeah. I forgot about that. How Steve Keane not got a biopic about him there? Benkies.
Yeah.
There'd be a good Blackburn documentary in there somewhere. You'd have to cover a long time very, very deftly.
Yeah, without putting you in the same bracket as Pete Donaldson, you do like to see a bit of
Chaos.
Yeah. Maybe not tragedy, perhaps. I think you would like a season of Derby County's 11 points in the Premier League.
Paul Dewey. Look, remember,
imagine
Paul,
that.
Paul Dewey had other priorities that season, didn't he?
Come on.
He did.
He did.
Yeah.
Certainly some footage that could be spliced in.
Oh dear, I think we should end there. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble Mailbag, part of the Acast Creator Network. We're back on Monday with a brand new ramble. In the meantime, do follow us on X, TikTok, YouTube and Instagram at Football Ramble, and follow us on Spotify. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Enjoy your weekends, everybody.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.